greatest teaching in the Bible on what we call the gospel. A couple of those songs that you sang this morning, God of Grace, and the song Before the Throne of God Above, talked specifically about the gospel. The gospel is simply the good news that God has made a way for you and I as fallen, created beings to be in fellowship with a holy, omnipotent God. Our text this morning is going to begin in Romans chapter 1 with verse 18, and we'll carry it through the end of the chapter this morning. Last Sunday, we ended with verse 17, which says, "For in it," that is, in the gospel that Paul is talking about, "in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith." In verse 17, Paul says the righteousness of God has been revealed to us. It's been revealed through the gospel message. Now, starting in verse 18 and continuing down in to the latter part of chapter 3, we have a section that deals with the question, why do we need this righteousness? Why do we need the righteousness of God? Why do we need the gospel message? And the short answer is simply this: we need it because of sin, which Paul is going to now expand on in the rest of chapter 1, chapter 2, and most of chapter 3. So over the next several weeks, we are going to be looking at, let me catch you up here on the slides. We're looking at the book of Romans. The theme is the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are going to be looking now at righteousness needed. It's needed because of sin. Now, the section that we're going to look at this morning, and I want to warn you of this ahead of time, is somewhat of a depressing section of Scripture. It paints a picture of the sinfulness of man, and it's really not very good news. It's not a picture that we are proud of. In fact, what we're going to look at today is very bad news for us. But I want you to hang in there, because there is good news. And as we get to the end of the message this morning, we're going to talk about the good news. Now, before we dive into this section of Scripture, let me make two comments. The first comment I want to make on the question, who does this section describe? As we read through the section this morning, you're going to see that the Apostle Paul talks about ungodliness and immorality and corruption and evil passion, and he lists about 25 terrible things. And the question that you're going to need to deal with is, are we really that bad? And that is the title of our message this morning. Is Paul talking about us? Paul's going to talk about murderers and sexually immoral people and haters of God and inventors of evil things and a whole list of other gross and sinful things. And is Paul saying that we're all like that? Well, the answer is no. He's not saying that we're all guilty of all of those things. But he is describing a culture, a mindset, a way of life that exists in our world. I remember several years ago, Mary and I were visiting a friend, and they were taking us around the area where they lived, and it was an area with many small communities. And they took us into one community, then, and they began to tell us about the people who lived in that community. And if my memory serves me right, they said things like, these people who live here are all a bunch of liars. They're all a bunch of drunks. They're all a bunch of cheats. In fact, they didn't have one good thing to say about the people who lived in that community. Now, I'm certain that those descriptions did not apply to every single person in that community. But as a general rule, the other people who lived around them knew that community by some of those terms that were used. That's what Paul is doing now in this section of the book of Romans. He is describing a world where the things we're going to read about exist, they predominate, they're tolerated, to show us why we need God's righteousness. Now, the second thing that I want to mention to you before we look at our scripture is the wrath of God. In verse 18, Paul begins immediately in this section by talking about it. He says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven." In verse 17, he talked about God's righteousness. That was revealed. Now in verse 18, he's going to talk about God's wrath. That has been revealed to us. Now, it's not so hard for us to talk about God's righteousness. In fact, we rather enjoy that. God is righteous. God is holy. He is without sin. That doesn't cause us any problems. We agree that God is righteous. But when the Bible begins to talk about the wrath of God, that's a little bit harder for us to understand. Is God up in heaven stomping his feet and throwing some type of a temper tantrum because he doesn't like what we're doing down here? Is God a vindictive God? Is he trying to get even with us with his wrath? That's how we understand the idea of wrath. I remember counseling with a couple years ago, and I was called to their house rather urgently. And when I got there, the husband was ducking dishes that were being chucked at him by his wife because she had found out something terrible about him. And her wrath had hit 10 on the 1 to 10 scale. That's how we think about wrath. It's an anger that has gotten out of hand. It's a desire to get revenge, to get back at someone. The reason that we struggle when the Bible talks about the wrath of God is because we only understand wrath from a human perspective. We only know wrath because we have seen wrath in ourselves or in other people. We've never seen wrath except from a human perspective. And so we think that God's wrath is like our wrath. But God is perfect. Listen to me. God is perfect in every way, including his wrath. Even God's wrath is righteous. His wrath is a perfect response to the sin of man. His wrath is a righteous response to sin, and it is a response to those who refuse his mercy and his grace and continue in their sinfulness to live life their own way. We struggle with this because in our human experience, we have never seen righteous anger. All we've seen is anger and wrath that has been expressed from a sinful perspective. That is not God's wrath. So when the Bible talks about God's wrath, as it does here in verse 18, please do not equate it with your anger and your wrath or any wrath that you've ever seen. It is fundamentally different. So let's look at our text this morning. And it begins with the evidence of sin, beginning with verse 18. Now, Paul is going to give us in these verses, three evidences that our world is a sinful place because it's filled with sinful people who deserve the holy, righteous, perfect wrath of God. Now remember, we're talking about the gospel, which is the good news. So how does all this sin and all this wrath fit into good news? Well, before people can understand the good news of the gospel, they have to understand their need for the gospel, that they are sinful people. So Paul is going to show us just how sinful our world is, which means just how sinful we are. So let me give you three evidences of sin in this passage. The first is people resist the truth about God. For the wrath of God, verse 18, is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Now, my text says that men suppress the truth in verse 18. That's why the wrath of God has been revealed, because men suppress the truth. The word that's used there actually means to hold down. So it has the idea of resisting the truth, which is probably a better understanding than suppressing the truth. That's why we've used the word in our outline. People resist the truth about God. God has revealed Himself to man, but, now again, this is a generalization of our world. Generally speaking, man has chosen to resist the truth that God has revealed. Verse 19 tells us what may be known of God is manifest in them. God has revealed Himself. He has manifested Himself. Now, most Bible commentators think this refers either to man's conscience or man's reason. In some way, God has put within man the knowledge that He exists. Even cultures throughout history who have never heard of Jesus worship gods of their own making because they innately understand that there is a higher being. Now, verse 20 develops this idea even further. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. That is, God has revealed Himself in creation. All you have to do is look at the world around you to see that God exists. The psalmist put it this way in Psalm 19, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork." God has revealed Himself in what He has made. But the evidence of God, that God has revealed Himself, has been resisted by man. Man in general has refused to believe it. And that is the first evidence of sin that Paul gives us. The second evidence of sin is that people do not recognize God in their lives. Verse 21, because although they knew God, or they knew about God, they did not know Him in a personal saving way, but they knew there was a God because of creation. Although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. This is the second step in a downward cycle of sin. People can look at the evidence of creation, and they can see that God exists, but they willfully ignore Him. They fail to give Him the glory He deserves. They refuse to be thankful to Him because of His goodness. Every single day, God shows His grace to us, to all of us. In my church in New Jersey, we had a dear deacon there by the name of McKinley James, and McKinley and his wife Betty became good friends of Mary and myself, and just beautiful African-American people. For years and years, McKinley and I spent every Monday night together visiting people in our community. McKinley used to pray, and he would always start his prayer, "God, thank You that today I could put one foot on the floor." You see, God's grace is shown to us in so many, many ways. The sun comes up every morning. That's God's grace. The plants, the rain waters the crops. That's God's grace. The plants grow and provide food for us. That's God's grace. You didn't die today. That's God's grace. The night comes so you can rest. That's God's grace. If you had food today, if you have a job, if you have people who love you, if you have a house to live in, if you have clothes to wear, if you are alive, that is God's grace. Last Sunday, my wife and I told you that our basement got flooded with the hurricane, the rain that came up, and we had about 2 inches of water, and we knew that when we went home from church last Sunday, we had to work all afternoon to take everything outside, start drying things out, get 2 inches of water. There's a little space in my basement. It's probably about 6 to 8 feet wide and about maybe 15 feet long, and it's a little separate room, and it has a little bit of a bump in it, and the water went over that, but the water couldn't come back as it receded. I sucked 65 gallons of water out of that one little space. You know we had a lot of water in our basement, and we worked all afternoon to take things out, to dry things off, and towards evening, after we got the fans running and the basement started to dry out, we began to bring things back in, and I picked up a container, and I felt a stab in my wrist right here, and I brought the container on in and set it down, and within minutes, my entire wrist was swollen and red and itched like crazy. It took all week for that to go down. Some little spider apparently decided that he didn't like me moving his nest and bit me. Do you realize how fast any of us could die? It just amazed me. There are dangerous things out there that could bite you today and you could be dead tomorrow. And we don't even think of it. And you know why you're not? Because of God's grace. Every day you and I experience God's grace even when we don't know it. Dr. Richard Strauss, who I believe is the son of Lehman Strauss, if you know that name and have read any of Lehman Strauss's writings, said, without God as part of their life view, they lost their ability to reason clearly. Paul says they became futile in their thoughts and their foolish hearts were darkened. Their thinking became empty. Their ability to understand life was plunged into the dark. They lost touch with reality. They became like blind people groping around in a dark room, trying desperately to find something that makes sense and gives meaning to life, but without success. Why? Because they turned away from God, and immediately there were shades drawn over their minds. The second evidence of the sinfulness of our world is that people do not recognize God in their lives. The third evidence